Right, hello. Welcome to episode 3 of the Rep Chat podcast with me, Ben Spools. Thank you all for joining today. We've got a very exciting guest on today, and I'll get that into a minute. I just want to say a quick thank you to everyone so far that has supported the podcast. It's going really, really well. I'm really happy with the amount of feedback, the amount of views and likes and follows and all that sort of jazz. So, yeah, thank you very much for the support. I also have to apologise as well. I have a very squeaky chair. I don't know if the new microphone's picking up or not, but it's doing my head in, so hopefully it won't be irritating you guys. So our guest today is a bloke I've been following for a while. He has got around 7,000 Instagram followers and 1,100 or just over 1,100 YouTube subscribers. And apparently the largest collection of Solomon Indicus in the UK. For you guys that don't know what that is, and for me, probably, let's get the chap on to explain. So without further ado, let's introduce Paul Burrows. Hello.
Hello. Hell of an intro.
Yeah, I try. I just sort of ramble on, to be honest. first of all, mate, how are you?
I'm all right, man. I'm all right. Thank you for working around me. I appreciate it. So I know it's been a bit of a nightmare to get me booked in, so I appreciate your patience with me.
No, not at all. Don't worry about that. Everyone's busy at the moment. Yeah. We should probably give a shout out to the wives and girlfriends as well. So thank you for being so flexible.
Yeah, man, for sure.
I don't know if you've listened or not before, but I have a little segment to start off called Get to Know. It's basically like 10 questions that are quick fire, and then we'll get into the podcast properly. So if you're happy to go ahead,
we will do the
Get to Know You questions. Yeah. Just have to bear with because I've got loads of notes written down because I'm not very good at going off the top of my head.
That's fine.
So, right, when you're ready. So, first question. First exotic pet?
Sudan plated lizard.
Nice. Favourite species currently kept?
Favourite animal is mangrove monitors. Favourite species is green tree. So, my mangrove monitor is my all-time favourite, but not my favourite species. Favourite species, green tree monitors.
Okay. Money, no object, and space, no object, time, all that sort of stuff. What would your ideal animal be?
That I can legally own a lace monitor, that I can illegally own a Parenti.
Nice. Fantastic. What do you think the most overrated species is? I think I know where you're going with this.
not royal pythons.
Nice.
Nile monitors.
Okay. And most underrated species?
Jeweled lacertas.
Fantastic. Right. And then just to move away from the animals for a second, we'll jump back in obviously in a minute. They're basically yes or no's, but the answers aren't yes or no. You'll get understand what I mean in a sec. So, beach or mountains?
Mountains.
Vacation or staycation?
Vacation.
Sun or snow?
Neither.
Okay. Night snow. In or night out? Go snow. Night in or night out?
Night in.
Early bird, night owl, or permanently exhausted pigeon?
24/7 awake eagle.
Oh, okay, that's a different. I haven't added that one. Yeah, that's not something I thought of. Cool.
All day person, man. No matter the hour up, I'm either in a good mood or a bad mood, but I'm constant throughout the time.
So. To be fair, I have noticed whenever I sort of messaged you, or it doesn't matter what time it is, there's always a response, and you're always awake.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
It's that fridge full of Lucozade, mate.
It definitely is.
That's the getting to know you section. It's just a little bit of fun, just to break the ice more than anything. And hopefully the listeners sort of learn a little bit about you. There's not a lot to delve into, really. So let's move on to the fun stuff. Tell us a bit about you. How long have you been keeping exotics in general? And sort of when did you start?
I had a Sudan plated lizard when I was like 7. So I'm 28, 29 in August, so 28 and a half. So when I was 7, I had a Sudan plated lizard. I had a couple of snakes through my teen years, but that was it. My parents didn't really let me keep reptiles. Yeah. So I would like order praying mantises off eBay and keep them on my bookshelf. I officially started keeping reptiles properly at 18. So it's been about 10 years.
Okay. And so going way back to the plated lizard, was that a pet that you decided you wanted yourself, or was it like a family pet? Because obviously 7's quite young, and a plated lizard's a bit of an odd one for your first exotic.
Well, plated lizards were really common in early 2000s, time by I was 7, but it'd have been 2001, 2000, 2001. I just wanted a pet lizard. Just wanted a lizard from early. Been obsessed with it. And my parents just went to the pet shop, and that's what was recommended. So that's what we got. Yeah,
that's fair enough. I think I got my first. I must have been about the same sort of age, maybe a little bit older, but about the same sort of time. I'm a couple of years older than you. Leopard gecko. To be fair, my local pet shop was my only sort of go-to place, and it was corn snakes, royal pythons, or leopard geckos, or beardies.
You've had
experience for a fair while then.
Yeah, I've pretty much kept everything, to be honest. I've even had a royal. I've had two.
Oh, okay. For those that aren't aware of Paul's podcast, we will go into it a little bit deeper, not too deep, because I don't want to open that kind of worms today.
That's fine, man. That's fine.
But Paul does a podcast called the Captive Raptor Podcast, and he has recently released an episode with Riddler Reptiles discussing their thoughts on the current day royal keeper that keeps in racks, I would say. It's definitely worth a listen. If you're a royal keeper and you get butthurt, go in with the idea that you might cry a little bit, but please listen to the whole thing as I did. It's really interesting and it will really make you think, but we'll cover that a bit more later. Your reptile keeping, let's say career for the sake of choosing a word, sounds honestly quite a lot like mine. Obviously, you've gone monitors, and I am more with the royals than anything else at the moment. But I've been keeping since I was sort of 8-9 years old. It would have been like 2001, 2003, that sort of time period I started. And again, at the time, I don't know if it was the same for you, but I've had corn snakes, rainbow boas, all sorts of different lizards and stuff. And it was more of a case of, that's in the pet shop, let's have one.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. So when I first moved out, I went a bit crazy and brought everything. So other than maybe iguanids, I've pretty much had one or two species from pretty much every collective of reptile out there.
Okay. Yeah. Any particular reason you didn't go for iguanas at the same time as you were going for everything else? Or?
No, I just think the size, obviously you can get small ones, you get the desert iguanas and the clubtail iguanas. I just think it was the size, the fact that they were big, and I was aware that I was bitten by a 6-foot male green iguana at 17 or 18, and that sort of put me off as well, to be honest.
To be fair, lizard bites hurt. I've been pretty lucky, touch wood, so far. The royals, they're pathetic. Even if they bite you, it doesn't really do anything. To be fair, I got bitten by one of our tortoises, and that really hurt. And that's really surprised me. Apart from that, the only bite I've had really was a Aki's monitor in my local pet shop. This thing probably was 7 inches long, if that. They went, get him out, it's absolutely fine. So I picked it up. I hold my hands up, I don't know much about monitors myself. Picked it up as if I would like a leopard gecko or a beardie, and it was having none of it, latched onto my finger, and probably held on for a good 15 minutes before it decided to let go.
Yeah, man.
It was entertaining, though. I quite like them.
They're cool, but all monitors, including Aki's, can definitely make you bleed.
Yeah. Let's move on to monitors. So you said you've been keeping, properly keeping, so to speak, from about 18.
Yeah.
So what are you keeping now? What's the majority of your collection? Obviously, there's quite a lot. If you want to touch on it briefly, and then we'll go into depth a bit more.
Okay, so I have 3 green tree monitors, 6 mangrove monitors, which is the largest collection of Solomon Island indicus in the UK. I have 1 peach throat monitor, 1 boss monitor, 3 Aki monitors, 6 Kimberley monitors, Kimberley rock monitors, a Bredos python, a corn snake, a bitter dragon, a scorpion, 2 spiders, 4 Gilinae, which are pygmy mogul monitors, and I think that's it.
Yeah, so a nice collection. And obviously, the monitors need quite a large space. I don't know the size of them myself, but obviously, even a small monitor needs quite a lot of room. So, where are you keeping them all?
In my conservatory. I have a massive conservatory. It's about 30 foot long by, probably 25 foot long, without VAT, by 14 foot wide. So.
Oh, I lost you there. Hang on.
You good? I can hear you.
Are we working?
Yeah, I can hear you. You good?
Yeah, that's weird. Mine just keeps dropping out. I think I'm all right now. Unless my router's having at the moment. But no, I think we're good. Sorry. So, okay. So I don't know if you've repeated yourself twice or not yet. You're giving them in the conservatory.
Yeah, it's quite a big conservatory. When we moved 3 months ago and we had to move somewhere that had really big space and open walls to be able to allow me to do what I want to do.
I imagine it's wall. In fact, I've seen some of the videos. It is wall to wall vivariums.
Yeah, it's pretty packed, annoyingly, because I want more, but I haven't got space.
Yeah, no, I bet you've been eyeing up the living room and the other space in the house as well. Then I wonder if I could get away with it.
Yeah, no chance, mate. Maybe my son's room, but other than that, that's it.
Yeah, I know. I know the feeling. Mine are pretty much in the kitchen, and that's I'm not allowed anywhere else. Luckily, there's what you can see behind me is my wife's, so we can sort of get away with that.
So
a nice collection of various monitors. Obviously, I don't know much about monitors myself at all, really. So obviously, we see Ackies in pet shops quite a lot. I imagine because they're quite small, they're quite a common one. And I know you breed them. And a friend of mine's actually got some of your baby Ackies as well.
Oh, cool.
They aren't that baby anymore.
Cool.
Which is where I found you originally.
Oh, cool. Nice.
It is a small world. So that was Rocky Ridge Reptiles, but Ben and Noah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I think they'll be on in a couple of weeks as well. But so I've seen there. They're really cool. So obviously, is it peaches, your mangrove?
Mango. Mango.
I get confused. So that one I see, is that the one that I'm seeing quite a lot on your Instagram? They're all stunning, but that one you seem to have a particular bond with.
The small one that's on my head is my peach throat monitor. So that's Toad.
Right, okay.
Mango's about 2.5 foot long, and she would bite my face off if I got anywhere near her.
Is Mango the one that when you open the glass, she will launch and run at your feet?
Yeah.
So if you haven't seen Paul's videos, go on his... Are they on your Instagram, aren't they?
Yeah, so if you can bring it up, it's on my pinned reel. Not that I care, but...
For the YouTube viewers.
Yeah, but it's the pinned reel. So literally the very start of my reels is the very first one. It's like a viral video of Mango chasing me. She's not the most friendly lizard,
but she's gorgeous.
Yeah, she is, and I like her because she's like a twat. So that's why I like her.
I know what you mean. Like most, obviously, my collection is 90% royals, but even the royals that have got an attitude are always much more exciting than the ones that are like pet rocks.
Yeah, it's fun because she can do damage if I sort of. Let her, so it's I have to be on my toes, you know. So she's not big, but she's still quite intimidating when she's charging at you full blast and tries to bite your legs. It's good fun. It keeps me on my toes for sure. But that's the allure of monitors. They're they're all different.
And they are intelligent as well, aren't they?
Yeah, their personalities show more than any other reptile. In the sense of individuality, because I have several species and several individuals of the same species, and they're all polar different, but completely different.
Yeah. That's a difficult one. Obviously, they are completely different. So, would you be able to say, so for example, say I know nothing, and I go, hey, Paul, I really want to get into monitors, or I really want to keep a monitor.
Mm-hmm.
What one would be best for, like, I don't know, that I want to handle or is tame? Obviously, they all have individual characters. So would you be able to say this species is generally less mental, or is it a case of per animal completely?
Yeah, I mean, I get this question a lot on Instagram. And I always start by saying to people, like, what do you want? So if your priority is handling, I would advise you not to get a monitor. If you're still adamant on getting a monitor, I would advise you to get an Aki. But then the problem is, if you don't like Ackies but you still want a monitor to handle, then there's not really an option. Like, all monitors can become handleable, but handling reptiles is a very selfish trait from the individual. Like, me handling my lizards is for me, it's not for my lizards.
Oh, yeah, like, they would much prefer to just be sat, left alone, and be fed. I think that's the case with probably all reptiles, if not all exotics in general. Like,
yeah,
I used to get tarantulas a lot as well, and a couple of them were handleable, but I know for a fact that they would much prefer to be left alone.
Yeah, 100%. And with the monitors, it's like they're smart enough to know that you're just going in there and picking them up, and they don't like that. So then with monitors, you have to have a lot of time. You have to be there every day. Food is the key to their heart. Use food to get them to trust you. My Aki's a puppy dog tame, if you want to use that. But
yeah.
I can pick them up, put them in my head, do what I want with them. My peach rate is seeming to be. But then my mangroves, the second they see me, they're running. And if I try to go in there and grab them, which I don't, I'm going to get bitten. So monitors are more on an observe, like a pet to observe. But if you do want a monitor and you do want something you can interact with, you can't really go wrong with an Aki.
Yeah. No, that's fair enough. And I suppose if you're starting quite small, well, if you're starting with an Aki, so to speak, they're relatively small as well. So if they are going to bite you, they're not going to do as much damage as if you were to say go and buy a Bosk monitor, which generally are quite they've got a bigger mouth, and if nothing else,
their Bosk monitors get up to 4 foot, 4.5 foot long. So
so my first experience ever with a monitor was actually a pair of monitors. So I must have been 18, 19 with a mate of mine. We were both keeping royals, and he had a few other bits and bobs as well, and he was like, oh, come around to my friend's. He's got some snakes and stuff, but we're only around the corner. He lived in this flat. I went in this flat, and it was wall-to-wall vivariums. Like, you name the species, he had it snake-wise. Like, this was back in the day where, like, I was keeping a variety of stuff as well. And I walked around the corner, and he had a staffy and two Bosk monitors just chilling on the floor. These things were just, like, they had an eight-foot viv, but the eight-foot viv had, like, a cat flap in it. Right. And they would come and go as they want, have free roam of the flat. And these things, they were big, but they were more chill than the dog was, to be fair. And that's probably the only experience I've had with a monitor up close and personal, like, and a big monitor at that. And I don't know how long he had them for, but obviously to hear you say they can be, they don't like being handled, so to speak.
Yeah.
It was bizarre for me to see these two, like, dog-sized lizards just wandering around. Like, they come up on the sofa and sit next to you.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. They definitely can show affection, if you want to say that.
Yeah.
And they definitely know people. Like, Mango, my mangrove, she knows the difference between me and Fee, my girlfriend. Like, 100%. Like, she'll be a bitch to Fee, but she's more or less reserved with me because she knows I don't put up with it. Whereas especially you see it in like Cyclora, the rhino iguanas, they recognize people and they'll actually seek the effect. Monitors can do that, but I don't. The problem is with reptile hobby, it's all opinions, and my opinion
definitely
is don't get a monitor to handle it. If it allows you to handle it, and if it allows you to be in its presence, then you're very lucky. And it takes a lot of work. My only question would be with those savannas. My brain goes, how hot were they being kept, and what was their diet like, and how fat were they?
I couldn't tell you how hot they were being kept at all. Wouldn't be able to tell you. I can tell you that the times that I was there, we would either feed them chicks or boiled eggs. I wasn't there a lot, and obviously they weren't mine, so I wasn't there all the time. I'd say I was only there once every, I don't know, 3-4 weeks max. That's what I was seeing them being fed. So I couldn't tell you day to day. But it's difficult because I didn't have any experience at the time, so I don't know what they were supposed to be body shape wise. But they were both, like, the flat was fully laminate floor. And they sort of would almost like swim around on their bellies as opposed to walking on their feet. And they did have quite big bellies, but then I don't know if, I presume they're not supposed to be fat, but I don't know what a fat lizard looks like.
All lizards in captivity are fat.
Yeah. So obviously, carry on.
Yeah, they're overweight. Like, Savannah should be really lean and streamlined. The problem is with the reptile hobby, you see pictures online of overweight lizards and you associate that with how they're supposed to look, because that's just what your brain sees when you think.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I was going to move on to. So, like, I quite often watch with my daughter Brian Barczyk's videos.
Yeah.
And obviously he's got all sorts of monitors. And again, his are all very tame as well. But look, I've been looking recently because obviously I knew you were coming on, and I like quite a lot of his are quite chunky, very slow moving. And I presume again that's like what you're saying is there because they're in captivity, they're being like fed a lot to try and tame them down, so to speak.
Yeah, and he, I don't dislike Brian Barczyk at all, but one of his most recent videos I've been watching recently, because obviously he's been going through like his diagnosis, so obviously
I'm watching well
and hope that he does well, but we won't dive into that. But they've got an Argus monitor and they undo the door, and the Argus monitor, so they're showing baby Kush the crocodile monitor, then the Argus monitor comes out and Noah and Mike are like grabbing it, and the way I like to say that is, you imagine when we first got horses and we tamed horses, we literally broke their spirit to the point of them depressingly wanting to serve us because they just knew they were going to get whipped or they knew they were going to get punished. It's the same with monitors. Like if you're getting out and it's running frantically through your hands, and like it's exactly the same as being kidnapped. You've just been ripped out of your home, and they're smart enough to know this. You've just been ripped out of your home, and all of a sudden this giant like non-scaly hairy thing is just doing this, and eventually you get to the point where you go, oh my god, I'm so exhausted or so scared I'm gonna freeze, and then people go, oh, it's tame. It's not, it's petrified for its life.
It's petrified and knackered,
and that's the reality of it. But people don't like listening to that, and when I say stuff like this, people attack me, and I really don't care because it is true. And if
at all, I think that's really interesting, and to see it, like to hear it from your perspective as well, like obviously I like watching Brian all the time. Obviously he's got chicken strip and is it Beetlejuice?
Yeah, the lace.
And both of those, they come out, and like you say, he's running them through the hands, and then he's like, this is what we do, this is how we calm them down, and we put them back afterwards knowing that they've had a what does he say, like it's been a good interaction at the end. But I've never really thought of it how you put it as, they're just knackered and terrified. And that's a really good way to put it.
It's the problem is with the States. The States, they're very far behind in herpetoculture, full stop.
Yeah.
And there's no point in saying they're not. They just are. And also, there's a lot of old heads, especially in the monitor world, that have been really successful doing it their way. And now there's a lot of young heads like myself coming through now. And I'm sort of trying to challenge it by going, well, just leave them be.
Yeah.
And then people are like, well, no, because eventually, and they do eventually become tame. But let me tell you personally, if you've got an animal that actually chooses to come to you and you've done nothing to influence that, that is 10 times more better than an animal eventually getting exhausted and just sitting. Like those videos of Toad climbing onto my head. I have to get her out at the moment because she's got an injured knee. That's the only reason I have her out. So I fence off my reptile room. So she's got it's about 10 foot long by 6 foot wide run. And I just sit in there and she just comes and climbs on my head, probably because she wants to get to height because they know height is safe.
Yeah.
But then I'm using that to reinforce the fact that I'm not scary. But when I have to get her out of the viv, she runs frantic. But I get her out of the viv and I instantly put her on the floor. I don't run. I just put her on the floor.
Yeah.
And eventually she calms down on her own terms. Eventually she comes over to me. And sometimes I'm sat in here for 45 minutes to an hour just to put some cream on her knee.
Yeah.
And I could get that done in 2 minutes. But then I'm like, nah, because I'm not going to force anything. And eventually she comes to me. Then I can put the cream on. Then I can let her roam around with the cream on so she doesn't get the cream dirty. And then I put her back. And
yeah, which sounds like a much more positive experience for her and for you as well.
Oh, 100%. And like I've been loving it because she's actually been wanting to interact with me. And I was like, oh, this is cool. From a lizard that was scared to death of me because they're wild caught animals. So obviously they don't know any different. And I do my best to put them in really live planted natural vivaria to make them as comfortable as possible. Yeah. But there's still an adjustment period, you know? So the fact it's actually choosing to come to me rather than me going, and I do a lot of live, so I don't even try and hide stuff, you know what I mean? So a lot of people go, oh, well, it's this and it's that. And I'm like, well, it's just not. It's just not.
But, yeah. People are very quick to jump to conclusions as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I just to touch on what you said there, obviously, is it he or she? She.
I think Toad. It's a she, yeah.
Toad is wild caught.
Yeah.
I believe quite a few of your collection are wild caught, so to speak.
More or less half.
And is that just because there just aren't the captive bred ones in the UK or even in the world?
Yeah, so mangrove monitors are only being captive bred by one person in Europe, which is a guy in Scandinavia. I'm the only person in the UK to be getting regular planned eggs from mangrove monitors. There are people that have done it, but not to the degree I'm doing it at the moment. Mango's currently just starting vitellogenesis, which is basically the cycle of having eggs for the fifth time in just over a year. So she'll be laying her fifth clutch of eggs in about 20 days. But people can't tell. I'm the only person. So I brought five babies so I could sort of get sex ratios and breed them. Peach throats, only one person in the world outside of Indonesia, to my knowledge, has bred them. Green tree monitors, they came in years ago, wild caught. Now they're starting to be captive bred. A really good friend of mine's a breeder of green tree monitors, but my two older ones are wild caught. My baby that's just here is captive bred. All boss monitors. Dean Cheatham in the UK is breeding them, but otherwise no one else. All boss monitors. I only got my boss monitor because it was a rescue. So there's just not people doing it.
And is that because it's like difficult? Because obviously my experience breeding leopard geckos, beardies and royals, which you can just like look at them and they have eggs. So is it hard, do you think, because they're wild caught animals and like they're not even F1s, are they? Like the F1 would be
they're wild caught,
Is it, do you think it's because they're wild caught that it's difficult to get a like captive bred population going? Or
I don't think so, because people struggle to breed captive bred tree monitors. Problem is with monitors, you need to cycle them in the sense of seasonality. So you need to give them a nighttime drop in the winter. You need to give them a dry period. You need to give them a period of famine. You need to give them like incremental changes with their temperature, humidity, with their spraying cycles, with wet seasons, dry seasons, depending on the species, where they're from. There's so much that goes into it. Like if you've got a reptile and it's not laying eggs and it's female, obviously, something somewhere in your care is wrong. Whether that's just because you choose not to hibernate them so they don't go through that natural cycle, or whether that's because you don't keep them quite humid enough 3 months of the year. But if your reptiles are female and it's not laying eggs, something somewhere is going wrong. Doesn't mean your reptiles unhealthy. It just means you're not meeting 100% of their natural requirements for them to fulfill their biological like right. That's what they do. They're here to hunt, survive, breed. That's what they're here to do. So
So let's go for peaches. You said peaches that's due to lay her fifth clutch, you said.
Mango.
I get confused.
It's fine. It's a hard one, but I got toad the peach throat.
I don't know why I keep calling it, but maybe someone else has got something called peaches. I don't know what it is.
Alan Woods used to have a peach monitor called peaches, peach throat monitor called peaches.
Mango's on her fifth clutch. Well, let's stick with her for now. So is she being paired with a male, or is that just she's just laying eggs at the moment?
No males. There's one guy in the UK that's got the male and he won't sell it to me.
Okay.
He's offered it on a loan, but it's not as easy as that. I need space to house a male, and I need space to like have a viv, and you can't introduce them unless they're on a cycle because they'll just kill each other. You have to do it. I'm very lucky that I know Mango so well, so I know when she's cycling, but like he lives in Manchester and I live right down south, like near Portsmouth. So opposite ends, not opposite, but he's in the middle of the UK.
Manchester's far enough. Like I'm not far. I'm pretty far south as well. Manchester's that's a long drive. I don't want to do that, and I can't imagine wanting to do it either. So if you were to like accept the breeding line, so to speak, would you have to? I presume you'd want to quarantine him. Would you want him set up like at yours for like say a year or so you learn the animal, or is it a case of he pops up, he slips in, he does what he needs to do, and he buggers off again?
In an ideal world, I would have it and learn him. But I think the reality would be put him in, see what happens, if on a breeding loan, because I can't house an animal short, long term. You know, I'd have to have an 8-foot viv just set aside for 10 months of the year doing nothing. So I'd rather set it up and have it, but the reality would be that I would have just a holding viv. He would come for a month, I'd put him in to breed, and then he'd go back in the holding viv, and then once he's done what he needs to do, go back to the owner.
Do you have a long-term goal of, obviously I presume you're going to hopefully try and breed them at some point in the future if you can find a male?
Yeah, so obviously I've got the five babies, so once they grow up, I'm hoping at least one of them will be a male.
Yeah. How long do they sort of take to get to the point where you'd be able to tell if they were male or not?
I'm pretty sure I've got at least a pair already. They're quite hard to sex, but within about 2 years, I should be breeding, all going well, within 2 years. But the eggs take 9 months to hatch, so I won't have any babies for like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, it's a long time, and it's like chameleon eggs, they take forever to incubate.
Yeah.
So that's so are you, obviously you've got the largest collection, so are we talking Solomon Indicus? I get so confused with all the scientific names. So
yeah, mangrove monitor.
The mangrove monitor is a Solomon Indicus, yeah?
Yeah, so Solomon is just a locality.
Yeah, Solomon Islands.
Yeah, Solomon Islands, it's just a locality. So obviously the Solomon Islands are made up of loads of different islands, but they're just classed as Solomon Island Indicus. Indicus is mangrove monitors.
Okay.
Which are pretty much my thing. So yeah, that's why I've got so many.
Yeah. So if your the boys you've got get size, say into, are you? What am I trying to say? Is there like a first in the UK to breed race, or is it just?
I think so.
Are there a lot of you keeping them, or is it just a handful? Just the two of you.
Yeah, just the two of us. Yeah, it's never been done in the UK. I mean, it's pointless because obviously I've got the female, he's got the male. He has a female Indonesian locality, mangrove, which has just started laying eggs for him. But he's focusing mainly on Doriellas, which are the blue tail monitors. So there's talks that I may or may not be buying his male, but we'll see. We'll see. But no, it'd probably be me purely just because he's going to focus on other species and I'm going to focus on the mangroves. But I wouldn't say that it's a race. It definitely is a race for the ego, but it's more important for the species than anything else. But yeah, I'd be lying if I said I wouldn't like to be the first. But as long as it gets done, that's the main thing for me.
So is that in captive pet owners that that's never been done, or is that including zoos?
Yeah, it's never been done in the UK
at all.
It's been done once in Europe. Well, done by one person in Europe. Full stop.
No, that's a pretty. So that would be a massive. It'd be really cool if you did it. It would be incredible.
Yeah.
When you do it, let's be positive. One day. So if you do it, let's say in a couple of years, is the plan to? Would you like to keep all the babies? Would you like to sell them on to people that you know that are interested and wanted to, expand the breeding, or would? It would be something you'd be interested in, perhaps like getting in touch with zoos. I don't know how that zoo thing works.
I don't think zoos would care. There's only one, to my knowledge, there's only one zoo in the UK that has a mangrove. So I don't think zoos would care too much. I would like to keep at least one baby. But the reality is there's not really a massive market. So they don't lay many eggs anyway. They lay 3 to 5 eggs in a clutch. So it's not loads. Plus, if I hatch all of them, getting really lucky because, like I say, it's 9 months incubation. A lot can go wrong, but eventually.
Sorry, just interrupted for a second. The incubation, is it like a stable temperature all the way through, or do you need to drop it and cycle it?
No, it's 80. Well, I'll be doing 28.5 degrees Celsius for 9 months.
Yeah,
it's like 190 days or whatever it is.
Yeah, that's a long time of staring at the incubator, isn't it? Just hoping. Yeah.
You have to forget that they're there, otherwise you do just stress yourself out.
Yeah, I can imagine. I don't think I'd be able to do like 9 months. Yeah, that's like the same amount of time. It's the same amount of time as growing an actual child.
Yeah, it literally is, yeah. So Aki's a long time for 4 months. It takes 120 days for Aki's to hatch, isn't it?
Yeah, royals are bad enough, and that's like 55, 60 days.
That's easy.
Yeah, yeah, well... Yeah, no, it is. It goes by pretty quickly, actually. So obviously the monitor keepers, I don't know whether it's all monitor keepers or when I say this, what am I trying to say? So, like, you get the big guy, you've got your big boss monitors. I'm going to include tegus in that as well. I don't know if that's offensive to monitor keepers or not. I apologize if it is. But like, obviously, you've got the guys that have like your big monitors, and then there seems to be quite a small group of you guys that are keeping I apologize if I'm sort of grouping you all in one thing, but your mangrove monitors, the tree monitors, that sort of,
yeah,
I want to say like the more delicate species.
Yeah.
Is it that there is a small collection of you that are all quite a close knit community, or is it they're just not, there's not a lot of them, so you don't really hear much about them?
Monitor keepers are, the problem is with tree monitors, they're bloody expensive.
Yeah.
So you're already at small barrier to entry because you have to have over £1,000 spare.
And is that just for the animal, let alone the setup?
Yeah, so the cheapest tree monitor in the UK currently is a green tree monitor, and that'll set you back about £1,500-1,800 for a captive bred baby. That's the cheapest, and they go up to like £3,000-3,500 when you start into different colours.
Yeah, I was going to say, because I obviously you're talking about greens, but I've seen, I think I've seen some yellow ones, and I've definitely seen a blue one when I was younger.
And blues, yellows, greens, and blacks.
I was going to say, I've been to Crocodiles of the World a few times, and they've got blacks, and they've got baby blacks as well.
Maybe, yes.
Is it, like I say, it's quite a small, close-knit community. Are you all sort of helping each other out? And do you have much to do with like the zoo conservation side of it? Because obviously, I imagine that they're not interested in the.
I'm just a keeper, man. I don't reach out. I do what I do for myself. Don't get me wrong. Conservation is important. I know a couple. I won't mention their names, but I know a couple of monitor keepers in the UK that are in talks with zoos for rarer species.
Yeah.
Like, I won't even get into it, but some rarer species of monitors.
Yeah.
There are a few people in the UK that are in talks with zoos, and I think that's incredible. But the monitor community is very tight-knit, regardless if we like each other or not. We all know what's happening. For the most part, I pretty much get on with everyone. I speak to pretty much everyone. The problem is with it, to get into it, it's a nightmare. You have to have money to get into it, but then the monitor community don't sell to people that aren't monitor keepers, and that's for no other reason other than the monitor keepers find out about the babies first. So unless you know a monitor keeper who's in the know, getting a tree monitor is quite hard because they tend to just sell. Well, other than the greens tend to hit public market, but the blues, the yellows and the blacks sell amongst the tree monitor people.
Before they've got a chance to meet anybody else. Yeah. So it's almost a case of if you wanted to get into it, and it was a tree monitor specifically you wanted, you almost need to make friends with someone that has a tree monitor to sort of get in a little bit, and then... Yeah. Okay, yeah, so that's interesting. Like, obviously, my background is royal, so there's loads of us. It's like, you can't, if you've spoken to someone that keeps any sort of exotic pet, they've probably had a royal at some point in their life. That's crazy. So it'd be interesting. So if you had any advice for someone that had their heart set on a tree monitor or do mangroves come under tree monitors, or is that
they're different. They're different complexes. But
okay. Let's say somebody wants to get into the more delicate species. So we're going to include mangroves and trees, tree monitors. Where would their first point of call be, apart from doing a mountain of research?
Okay. Let's just say in the UK, find someone in the UK that's willing to talk to you. I don't want people to constantly message me because I get it a lot.
That doesn't mean bombard Paul on Instagram.
I'm very open to reply, and I don't gatekeep. A lot of people do gatekeep, and they go, oh, go and do your research, but I'm very responsive. So find someone in the UK, find out what you want, get the setup ready, and I don't care if the setup's empty for a year, because when you do eventually, like, sometimes one will hit the market, and if you haven't got something ready, then these aren't the sort of animals that you can go, I'll buy it, and then just go and get a setup. You need the setup ready, just sitting, waiting. So if you're that serious, get everything ready. And then I also wouldn't recommend that you go into a tree monitor or a mangrove monitor if you've never kept a monitor, because it probably will die. And that's not me being harsh. If you're a really advanced keeper, it won't. But like, if you're just keeping a Beardy or a Leo and then you want to get into monitors, and you're not ready, no matter what people say, you won't be ready for it, and they're not forgiving of mistakes, especially tree monitors. Mangrove monitors are, but I don't recommend mangrove monitors to anybody. They're terrible pets, but tree monitors are amazing pets as long as you know what you're doing. But if you can't keep a cool, humid viv, then obviously they still want it hot, but you need to keep like a 50 degree basking spot, but then have an ambient of like 26, but then also be like 70% humidity. So if you can't do that, so the best way to do that is set up the enclosure and make sure you can do that, so you know your lizard won't die.
Yeah. So say like, obviously last year we had a hot spell in the UK. Mm-hmm. It touched like 35, almost, I think it's 40 degrees in some places.
Yeah, it was 39 at my house.
Yeah, how did you deal with keeping the animals cooler? Because obviously, most of the time, especially in the UK, we are heating the enclosures to make them, get them up to temperature, not then trying to get them down. So is that a massive panic? Do you have like stuff in, is it relatively easy to do for yourself? Or
I just turned everything off. I didn't have anything on for a couple of days. The thing is with monitors, obviously, all reptiles, overheating will kill them a lot quicker than underheating.
Yeah.
But an ambient of 30, 33 for majority of monitor species for short periods of time, in the sense of 5 hours a day, is not going to kill them.
Yeah.
The key is to have humid hides that you just spray that are cold. So tubs filled with moss, spray it, it will stay cold. Obviously, it'll still be warm, but it'll stay cold in comparison to the rest of the viv. I just turned everything off. Like monitors are very hardy as long as you know what you're doing. Like if you just chuck one in a box and hope for the best, you're not going to have much success.
Yeah, but I think that's the case with most reptiles. Some of them will survive. Some of them will survive a lot longer in a box than others will.
Oh, 100%. That's why we have beginner species.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously, we're talking about monitors as a whole, but how would you compare? I don't know if this is an easy comparison to make or if I'm just talking absolute bollocks, but like, how would you compare, say, a mangrove to a bosque? I don't know how to, not temperament, because obviously they're completely different animals, but say care wise, obviously they're both going to need heat, they both need an exercise enclosure, they need food. So if you were, let's say they were both the same experience level, for want of a better word, and you were had a list of pros and cons of both of them, where do we start? Like obviously the size,
getting any lizard over 3 foot, you need to be seriously committed. I always say to people when they're buying animals, always look at the cons, because if you can deal with the cons, then everything else is just a pro. So the cons of bosque monitors is they eat ton, and they eat, they're 99% insectivorous, so my boss wanted to cost me about 50 quid a week to feed it. So you need deep
that's
pockets.
A lot of locusts as well, I presume.
Roaches, worms, beetle grubs, any varieties. Key
50 like, quid worth of locusts is a lot of locusts. I think I go through 6 quid's worth a week.
So my food bill overall a month, let me just do some quick math. I spend roughly about 130, 140 quid a week, roughly, feed every other.
That's a lot of insects.
Yeah, about 700 quid a month in electric as well.
Boss monitors, they eat a lot.
They eat a lot. They need it hot. So you're talking a basket spot of 65 degrees Celsius. Yeah. You're talking a minimum of an 8 foot by 4 foot by 4 foot enclosure for a male. 8 by 3 by 3 for a female, that's a minimum. But when you're talking monitors, you don't want to be doing minimums. So you need to take up a lot of real estate in your house.
You almost need like a whole room for them.
They need a lot of deep soil. So if you're planning on having them upstairs, then it might end up in your living room, full through floor. So make sure you've got concrete floored houses, because you're talking like a ton of dirt.
Let's say, what's that, like a foot of dirt at least?
I mean, there's ways around it. Mine doesn't have a foot of dirt all over, but also mine's only maybe 18 inches long. Mine's only small. But I've got a big corner in the back left, which is completely heated with like a tunnel in it. So it's like a pre-medicated burrow. So it can dig and fulfill its microclimates throughout that. So there are ways to cheat. But if you've got a big male, you're going to want 8 to 10 inches minimum. Minimum I have in mind is about 6 inches, and it goes up to about 14 inches at that back corner. You're going to want 8 to 10 inches throughout, ideally, especially for males, because males are like 4-ish foot long. Females can sometimes be as small as 2.5 foot. So it's completely different lizards, but same lizards, but males and females can be massively different.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, but so then you don't know the sexes either. So from a baby, you'll never know the sex. You could end up with a 2-foot lizard. You could end up with a 4-foot lizard.
Yeah. So going into it, you have to not worst case scenario, but you have to go for the extreme that it's going to be a male. It's going to be bigger, and you need the space.
Yeah, 100%. And you need a lot of time as well. Like, you need to be present, because if you just hope for the best, it's never going to learn to like you. So regardless of the species, if you aren't spending time with it daily, tongue feeding it, interacting with it, showing up, changing its water, spraying it whilst it's out and looking at you and learning that you're not a predator, then you're going to have a lizard that hates you. And even then, it could still hate you, because they're
monitored. Yeah, so, sometimes they just don't like you.
Yeah, exactly.
So talking, quickly just touching on space, obviously, that's the, like, let's say, the minimum size they need as an adult. Mm-hmm. Would you recommend, out of your own personal experience, would you get your baby monitor, let's say it's, I don't know, fresh out of the pet shop, little tiny one, is it going straight into an adult, like, 8-foot viv, or are you better, like, staggering it?
It depends what you want. Some people say put it straight into the 8-foot. I personally don't, because, myself included, you stress if you don't see your animal for 3 or 4 days. Like my mangrove, sometimes I don't see for weeks, and that's not an exaggeration. I had to put a camera in the viv because I generally didn't see them for weeks, because they live underground.
Right.
The babies, anyway, the fossoria was babies, which I didn't know.
you put them in and they were just, where have they gone?
Literally, they've got rabbit warrens throughout the whole viv. But I generally didn't see them for about 2 weeks. And rather than disturb them, because they were acclimatizing wild caught, so I put a camera in there. And they come out during the day, but I work 7 a.m. till 6 p.m., so I'm pretty much out of the house. But, yeah, I think a 4x2x2 or something similar for a baby monitor. You basically need to be in a viv big enough to give you a 55, 60-degree basking spot, depending on the species. Sometimes it's 45, but anyway. And then, like, a 24, 26-degree cool end, like a cool corner. So you need a viv at least big enough to do that. Like, you don't want the whole ambient to be 24, but you want a spot in the viv where it's like 24, so they can at least cool off if they want to. But the ambience for a boss monitor, you're going to be running 28, 30 degrees. But they need those cooler, more humid microclimates so they can thermoregulate properly. So you need a viv at least big enough to do that.
Yeah, which is it's a big space you're going to need regardless of, like, to create that. The fluctuation in temperatures, like, that's, if you, what do you say the hot spot to be, like 65 degrees as well?
Yeah, something like, for an adult, you're talking babies. My one's currently sat about 55 degrees as a juvenile. Yeah.
So even so, like, if you were in like a 3-foot viv, like you see them in the pet shops, there's no way the cold end's going to be cold enough.
Pet shops don't keep boss. I don't care what pet shop you are, you don't keep boss monitors correctly. Like, it's temporary holding, but you just don't.
Yeah, I find a lot of the pet shops, they have their set size vivs with the set size bulbs, and whatever the animal is that they've got at the time goes in there, and it doesn't even, like, it's not in there for a long time, so they don't really care.
No, yeah,
which
I agree.
It is a shame, but
some do it better than others. For the most part, the species like boss monitors, they aren't giving a 55, 60 degree hotspot. They're just not.
No. Yeah. No, that's fair enough. Right. I have got a slow start wrapping up because I've only got a limited time, unfortunately, today. But just moving on, let's move on to your podcast quickly. So you run or host the Captive Raptor podcast, or Raptors. Yeah. Where can people find it? And what, obviously, you're talking Raptors, what sort of thing? Basically, plug your podcast is where I'm going.
basically, just Paul's Monitors on Instagram, Paul's Monitors on YouTube. Easy enough. I started the podcast. I started social media because I kept seeing monitors in bad conditions on social media. So I thought, okay. So I started in May last year. I think it was the 1st of May. I created my YouTube channel last year, and I started it just to sort of promote welfare and husbandry of monitor lizards. That was the plan, and now it seems to have become a therapy session for reptile keepers.
I was going to say it's definitely. Yeah. I've caught up on quite a lot of your episodes recently, and. They're very informative, but you like to go deep on your podcast.
I don't script them. I don't have no notes at all. Yeah. So I'll research a guest and I'll be like, okay, their stuff looks cool. And then I just talk, and then whatever pops into my head and what I'm curious about and where I'm thinking and what I like is where I will go with the conversation. I don't have bullet points or headings. It's just a conversation with a reptile keeper, and I want to know what makes your brain tick.
No, and they are really good, and they flow really well. Like, I'm not going to lie, I have got a little notepad in front of me with a few sort of bullet points.
I think most do.
Yeah, and I don't know how I would cope on the podcast if I didn't have it, but I'd be worried to try it without, because sometimes I go, shit, I completely forgotten what I was talking about.
When we do round two, you're not allowed to make any notes.
That's what I'll tell you what, next time I'll come on your podcast and I won't be able to have notes because I don't know where we'll be going with
it. We'll go, done, deal.
That sounds awesome. So yeah, everyone go and check out Paul's podcast on YouTube. Like he said, you search Paul Burrows on YouTube and it's the Captive Raptor podcast. And yeah, they go deep. You like to touch, well, I'm going to touch on the mental health if you don't mind a little bit.
That's fine.
Obviously, it is a, like you say, it's a reptile keeper's therapy session.
Yeah, very much, yeah.
And especially your last podcast that I watched with Ridley Reptiles, you guys go really deep. And it did make me think about myself quite a lot as well. Yeah. And I came away going, not enough, especially men. And it seems to be men around our age. I'm 30, you're like 28, you said.
Yeah, maybe 29. Yeah,
like, we don't talk about our feelings at all.
No.
If you want to know more about Paul's past, go and listen to Paul's podcast, because we haven't got time to touch on it today properly. But it's definitely something that people need to talk about more.
Yeah, for sure, man.
You're a massive advocate for mental health.
Yeah, I suffer with depression, so I'm very open about it. I don't know how much you do and don't want me to say in the...
Honestly, it's completely up to you. I don't mind, but I don't want to be talking about your personal...
No, it's fine. Basically, I tried to commit suicide in 2020, and I talk about it incredibly stoically, and I talk about it in the sense like it's nothing, but that's just my personality.
Yeah.
And I went to hell and back, and I even got a demon tattooed across my back to remind me to never stop running. And the more I've learned about mental health is the running is the worst thing you can do, because the more you run to the light, the bigger shadow you cast. So when the pendulum inevitably swings, you fall even further into like the pits of despair. So the best quote I've got for it is, sometimes it rains and it's not your fault when it rains. And if it rains, you look outside and go, I'm supposed to play football today. That's all right. We'll just play it next week. It's not your fault that it rains. You've got two choices. You just cancel and reschedule your plans, or you learn to dance in the rain. That's all you can do. It's not your fault. We all get down. A lot of people don't talk about it. I, for some reason, decided to spread it all over the internet. But I think what's good about my podcast, it's like you say, because you weren't expecting it. You were listening to me bashing people that keep snakes in racks.
Yep.
And all of a sudden I start going, do you know what? I really struggle with depression. Ridley's saying about he had postnatal depression. I was saying that I had depression to do with my son because I got divorced and had to leave my family. And I think a lot of people that struggle that got to the end of that podcast, it's like nearly 3 hours long.
Yeah, I listened to every single minute of it as well.
I appreciate it. But yeah, I think it's not expected. So people that listen go, oh God, like it catches them off guard. And I'm very proud of that episode, actually. Very proud.
No, you definitely should be. I'm really running out of time now, so I'm just going to finish it off. So if anyone's struggling with mental health, if you don't mind, where would you point them? Where would be their first port of call? Obviously,
the Diary of a CEO podcast changed my life.
There you go. So that is Paul's very quick advice. If you want more, if you need anything else, obviously,
also listen to Paul's podcast. If you're struggling,
message me, message Paul. Yeah. Like, don't suffer on your own. Even if you're not sure, there's always someone to talk to.
Yeah, 100%.
Right, the last thing I like to do on the podcast before I say goodbye to you, Paul, is something I call the Wall of Fame and the Wall of Shame.
Yeah.
Basically, you have to imagine a hall, a bit like a Pokemon sort of trophy cabinet thing. It's for new reptile keepers. And as they walk in, they walk into the Hall of Shame.
Yeah.
And it's just aisles of shit that people have gone, oh, well, I saw this when I started, or this is something I don't like in the reptile hobby.
Yeah.
It's here, so you guys never have to deal with it. Once they've gone through the Hall of Shame, we've got the Hall of Fame, which is all the good bits, and that's how we finish. We finish on a good bit. Okay. So what would you add to the Hall of Shame to start with?
Red bulbs.
Red bulbs. Okay, fantastic. Do you want to elaborate on why you want to
red bulbs? They don't give your reptiles day-night cycles. People use them for nighttime heat and it's irrelevant. It doesn't even work. They don't even give you true infrared A or infrared B. And also it's proven that they hurt your reptiles' eyes.
There we go. So red bulbs, really bad.
Yeah.
I'm running out of words. Your Hall of Fame, what would you like to...
Jungle
LEDs.
LEDs. Yeah, brighten your vivs. These animals, they're sun worshippers. The best way to get sun is have a halogen heat bulb, have LEDs, and have a T5 UVB, all of which will 6,500 Kelvin, or just buy Jungle Dawn. Save up for it. You don't have to have it tomorrow. And then that will give you the best chance of replicating the sun for your reptile, which is a sun-worshipping animal. And the colors, behaviors, and activity will increase tenfold, and you'll regret never buying one when you brought your lizard or snake.
I have to agree. I've got Jungle Dawns in quite a lot of my vivs now, and like the bigger enclosures, and they make a massive difference. They really do.
That was a cool little bit, man. I like that. That was cool.
Yeah, I like that. It's a good little bit.
Yeah, I like that.
Thank you. Right. So I am going to say goodbye. I'm just going to kick you out of the pod quickly and finish off. And then, that's it. So I will say goodbye to you now. Thank you very much for coming on. I really appreciate it. Like I said, all Paul's information will be in the description. Go and check out his podcast. Go and give him some love on Instagram and YouTube. Like I said, go and listen to the Riddler Reptile episode if you're a Royal Keeper. It will make you think. But please don't go and send him loads of hate afterwards, because there's no need for that. There's enough hate.
I'll die on that hill.
Right. Thank you very much, mate. It was lovely to speak to you. I'll speak to you soon.
Cheers, man.
Cool. There we go. That was Paul Burrows from Paul's Monitors and the Captive Reptile Podcast, the Captive Raptors Podcast. Hopefully you enjoyed that. We could have gone on for hours and hours, but unfortunately it's a pre-recorded episode today and I only have an hour. So to finish up, please go and follow me on the socials if you haven't. So that's RepChat on YouTube and Instagram. Go and give us a subscribe, a follow, a thumbs up, a like, whatever it is. Go and tell your friends. If you go to Instagram or in the description of this on YouTube and probably on the audio platforms, there's a Linktree link on there. You can find links to YouTube, all of the audio versions of the podcast. There's also an Amazon wish list and a Buy Me a Coffee if you want to support the podcast. Every little helps. So all the links are there. I also have to say a quick shout out to Kim's Wellness Space for sponsoring this episode, and she very kindly purchased the microphone for us. So if you want to go and check that out, she's on Instagram at Kim's Wellness Space. It's a page based around yoga, just general well-being. That's a nice little Instagram account to go and check out. Kim on there is always very happy and cheery as well, which is nice. There are more sponsorship opportunities if you want to sponsor an episode or the podcast as a whole. Slide into my DMs on Instagram and we can sort something out. That's it for now. I will see you guys in 2 weeks. Thank you very much. That's me. Goodbye.